Hi there, Nathan. I'm with Nathan Ward, designer of Family Tree, and my name's Helen Tovey. I'm editor of Family Tree, and we're here to talk about family history. So how are you doing anyway, Nathan?
I'm doing well, thank you. Suffering from hay fever, it seems, which is very upsetting.
Yeah, I've got that as well.
I haven't had it for years, and just today it's destroyed me, so I'm talking.
You're going to have to edit out any sneezes we do.
Yeah, constantly. I'm good. I've been a very, very naughty boy, I must confess. So obviously, after our last meeting with the awesome Karen, I meant to be looking at my DNA matches. I'm not saying I haven't done that, but I might have gone off on a bit of a tangent. Let's just be honest. I haven't properly looked at it. I have looked at one of them, who was my mum's cousin, and my tree was fuller than her tree. And my information, quote unquote, in my opinion, is more accurate than hers. So I didn't learn much from her. And then I looked at another one very quickly, but this guy had like 300 people on his tree. And I saw a few matching people on there. So that was good to see, like the past were following similar routes, but I didn't take it too far. So anyway, that makes me sound like I've been almost like a good boy, but I haven't. But I've had a lot of fun. I decided to get my mum involved. So I spent an afternoon with my mum and we just sat together and looked through all the documents that
sounds so good.
He'd got. And she really loved it. It was really good fun. And we just sort of, well, my head exploded by the end of it. There were too many names, too many numbers.
So let me visualise it. Did you have a table and you literally had all these real world things, not looking at digitised documents, you're looking at all those certificates and stuff your mum's ordered over the years, they're all over the table. Is that what it's like?
A little bit, yeah. I had the laptop on the table, and then I had this big metal box that she's got all the documents in. And I've looked through it before, but not in a very good way. She knew exactly where everything was, and she was like pulling out files. And then within these files were loads of actual birth, marriages, and death certificates. So we literally, I think we took three files, which were three different strands of the family, and went through every single document in each of these folders. So my initial reason for doing this was I want to order Maggie Nelson's death certificate and Ida Nelson. Is she a Nelson? Yeah, her death certificate. But I thought, being a tight Yorkshireman, if my mum's already got it, I won't need to do that. Spoiler alert, she doesn't have them, so I'm going to have to order them. As it was, we sat and went through everything. So as I'm going through all these real world documents, we're like folding them out. They're all like really old, cell taped together.
Brilliant.
It was really cool to touch them and see them. And some of them I actually recognised from being on Ancestry. She had like photocopies of like the 1921 census or whatever. It's like, oh, I've got that on Ancestry. But the real documents were cool to sit and look through. And initially, a lot of them were people that I already had on my tree. But then I was just double checking the information that I had on my tree versus what was on this proper document. Because these were the proper documents. And most of them matched up, but there were a few discrepancies where a birth date was wrong. So obviously I took the printed document for being the stronger thing, because that's obviously the official, I can't remember who it was now, but William's birth, for example. It was quite funny, actually. A lot of stuff was to do with my Auntie Mildred. There was loads of stuff about that and loads of stuff about her husband, William, who was Alan, you know, the one we were searching for before. So I could have quite easily got to all this information had I just asked her. But I did want to do that as a research task anyway, so it's fine. But it all backed up everything that we'd found out. So that was good to see.
I definitely think you haven't wasted your time doing it yourself. Like, to me, it feels as though, let's say you want to get fit, like you love running. And if you said to someone else, can you just go for a run for me? Because I really want to get fit. It's like, well, you don't actually get fitter. And so you don't get better at doing family history unless you do it yourself. So yeah, definitely not a waste of time. All those things, skills and the way you fit the jigsaw pieces together, you will have got those forever. Once you've learned it once, you just get better at doing searching.
Yeah, I think without doing all the stuff we've been doing, I'd have looked at those documents and not known what to look for and where to look, whereas I was using the quote-unquote detective skills to be like, oh, that's that name, that's there, that's that, and who's present, and all this bit. So I was pulling all that stuff that we've learned, or like you've taught me. So it was really useful, and it made it really easy for me to translate it all. So I was like doing so much cross-referencing. I was checking what I had Ancestry, checking my Excel document, because a lot of it was direct line stuff as well, and making sure everything matched up. It was really cool. And I think my mum really loved it and appreciated it. She's like obviously I got somebody now who's interested in the family tree, and she's obviously started it. So it's quite a nice, you know, quite a nice family afternoon, to be honest.
It's definitely a lovely project to be able to do with someone else in the family. Like, that makes it all the more special if you've got someone else to talk to about it.
Yeah. She was thrilled as well. And like, obviously she's done research. I don't know how long ago she did her research, probably, I don't know, the 90s or something like that. So it's been a long time. So it's you can see it's all flooding back to her as I'm talking about it. And then she's getting quite excited. It's like being on a treasure hunt when you're the ones in the room looking for all the clues to send Annika off to. It felt like that. It was good. So I think she really enjoyed it.
Mm. I'm just going to say one thing about the dates. So, you know, you said in a very few instances there was a bit of discrepancy between what was the correct date. And what you can do is not have to kind of lurch from one date to another, go, oh, no, this date's different, I'm going to change it, this date's correct. What you can do is just keep gathering the information about the birth dates. For instance, let's say it was a birth date or any old date.
Mm-hmm.
The date for an event, so whether it's a birth or marriage or evidence of somebody living in a place, keep gathering the information and just keep put it all in a pot, and then gradually the common detail, the one which is most likely, you know, which keeps being repeated, which tends to hopefully be the correct one, will kind of rise to the surface. You're able to see, okay, on the whole, they say that they were born on the 18th of April, and that kind of comes true. So you don't have to immediately change what you think, but just kind of keep them all in one place, and then see, you can time, you know, put them in a little list and see which one seems the most likely.
Yeah.
Helpful.
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, I've sort of made notes of everything that I've done or anything I changed. I put that on my research log to say why I've done
it. So impressive.
What a good boy. So, yeah, I literally like went on and said, I've done this because this has come from a paper document. So it's the official birth document. So I'm taking that as the better one. But then I've still got the old information on my research log of what it used to be. So fingers crossed that'll all come together. I do feel a bit naughty because obviously I didn't do the full diving into my DNA matches, but it was really useful, everything that I've gone through. And I feel like, actually, I think I told Karen I'd got back to my great, great, great grandparents and done the full list. I haven't. I'm one layer back, but I think I got about 7 or 8 of them from my session with my mum, where we just went through stuff. So all these names started appearing. So it was actually, it got me back, which was great.
Whenever you do decide to go do your DNA, it's going to stand you in good stead. It doesn't matter if you don't do it yet, because it'll make more and more sense the better your tree is anyway. So it's, I think, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I looked at my mum's cousins and my tree surpasses hers for where it's gone.
Yeah.
So that's probably not a useful one to look at. It's too close. But yeah, I am now obviously seeing these great grandparents coming in, and it does look like it's getting harder to find details. So yeah, matching up with that other tree that I did have a quick look at, I think that will actually be quite useful.
Mm. And also, your mum's cousin is going to be useful to you, because what you can do is go on Ancestry and then look at the matches that you and her share, and you're going to know that those matches come from that line. So your mum's cousin, the ancestor they have in common, is your mum's cousin is a grandparent, isn't it?
Yes.
So your mum's mum or dad and your mum's cousin's mum or dad, their parents are
the same. Yeah.
Yeah, the same. So that will narrow, you'll be able to go, okay, everyone in this shared match list, providing they kind of share more than, say, 30 centimorgans, they're going to be on this line. So that's really helpful. So you can put them all in the group, you can get your coloured dot, whatever colour shape you want to have.
Mm.
You can put them all, go to this cousin, go to the shared matches, give them all a whatever colour dot you want, and you know that that gives you, starts to sort out that massive match list, doesn't it? And go, okay, these are relevant to this branch, and then there'll be other of your DNA matches who will give you clues that can tell you, okay, these matches are all relevant to this branch, and gradually they kind of get organised.
Right, okay. That sounds like a new level of learning and
organising. But just don't try and do everybody. Literally, just go to the mum's cousin.
Yeah. It's quite funny. Like, I mean, literally, I honestly sat down with the intention of doing the DNA thing, but I thought, I'll let my mum sit with me whilst I do it.
Yeah,
because she'd be quite interested to see how far her cousin's got and who else might be matching up. So we sat there and started, And it actually, as much as I've got more knowledge, it made me feel like I was at that beginner stage again, because suddenly names were exploding everywhere and dates were flying around. And after about an hour and a half, I had to like stop my mum talking. I was like, you can't say any more names to me or any more dates, because they're just not going to go in. It was just like this wealth of information. It was really good.
Yeah. As you know, I find that, like, I love talking to other people in the family about family history, but I find it really hard to actually do family history with them. And I think it's because I'm a bit slow, or I get in a muddle, or I forget which buttons to press. And then you suddenly feel in the hot seat when there's someone like breathing over your shoulder and you're trying to do it in front of them. So I always find that a little bit stressful, if I'm honest. I'm better off talking about it, but not actually.
Yeah.
No.
We had lots of things where I was doing bits of stuff, talking to my mum about it. So I was like, oh, I'm talking about Mary Ann so-and-so, da-da-da-da-da. And then she's thinking about Mary Ann so-and-so and looking at documents. I've then gone off somewhere else. I'm looking at a different branch and there's another Mary Ann and I'm working on that one. And then she starts telling me stuff, but I'm thinking she's telling me about the one that I'm thinking about, but I haven't told her I'm looking at that. So it just got really confusing, because there seems about 8 Mary Anns now on this line as well. So it's, and obviously they've all got different surnames. It was good. Really cool. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, excellent.
Nice sharing experience. I've got a question for you, actually. One of the Mary Anns I've just been talking about, I hadn't added her properly to my tree because I didn't know her birth name, which I found out it was Taylor. So put that in, boom, it's on Ancestry. She married, I don't know, my mum's great-great-great-granddad, who's Wood. So then she was known as Wood, obviously. But in between that, my mum told me she was married 3 times before. So she married a Briggs. So she was called Taylor. She married a Wood, not my Wood. She then married a Briggs, and then she married a Wood, my Wood. How do I put that information somewhere? How do I store it and work with it on Ancestry? Because obviously she's going to have loads of different documents in loads of different names. And it's how is Ancestry going to know that my Mary Ann Taylor is actually the Briggs, the Wood and the Wood?
Yeah, I love it. So this is such a cool example. So first of all, slightly off topic, but let's say you didn't know about all of these the three different marriages she'd had. It'd be really easy to assume that the Wood and the Wood was one man, and you go, hey, one time he's called, for instance, Joshua Wood, and another time he's called Henry Wood. They've got his first name wrong, and you kind of blur the fact that actually there's two men going on. So that's kind of a good learning point to all of us, to kind of keep thinking, you know, don't just immediately change it from Henry to Joshua, like I was saying with the birth dates. Don't immediately change it, just keep gathering the information, and then the picture will become clear. The picture in this instance is that she's married to two separate men called Wood. So how you record it in the tree is what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to call every woman who you add to your tree, you put their maiden name as their main surname. So you enter her maiden name in her surname field. And then how you'll be able to include the marriages is just include it as a fact. So add fact and add a marriage, add the details of the marriage, add the details of the spouse. And then on Ancestry, I think you can toggle between which spouse. The only slightly frustrating thing is I think you can only see the spouse for one tree at a time. Like, what would be really ideal is if you could see a massive exploded tree with Mary Ann, with her husbands listed in order, like husband one, husband two, husband three, with any children going down from them. But I don't think you can view all of the spouses and all of the children in one go. I think you can go, right, let's have a look at husband one and the children they had. Then let's have a look at husband two. But have a quick experiment. So all those details will get included in Ancestry if you include them. So you go to Mary Ann's profile, you make sure you've got her maiden name in the maiden name slot, and then you make sure you've added the fact, and you can choose it as a marriage and add the details, like in 1858, Mary Ann married Bridges or Briggs or whatever you said it was.
Yeah.
And even if you only had it scruffy at the moment, if you can't remember the details, just add what you do know, because that's better than not adding anything. And then when you get the dates again or get fuller information or when you get a source, so when you find your record in, say, Ancestry's collections or in your mum's metal trunk, then include that as the source, include a digitized image of it, and you the full details. Go, it was this church, this date, etc.
Right. Okay, cool. So if I create a fact, I can add people.
Yes. Let me just go to my ancestry tree, because then it's easier to remember where the words are and stuff like that.
I'm a little terrified now, actually. I've just gone to my tree. I always refuse to add the wife until I know the maiden name, but I've actually got her listed as a second marriage name. So I've done something wrong somewhere. Unless, is there a way to find rogue people?
Yes. So if you know what the names of the rogue people, why are they rogue? Tell me why they're rogue then.
I'm just guessing I might have accidentally created a second entry for the same person on Ancestry.
Okay, yes.
So I've got Marianne Briggs, and I think I'm looking for a Marianne Taylor.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so what you can do is you can go to your tree. So find your tree on Ancestry, which presumably you're already looking at. And then if you go over on the left-hand side, there's a little vertical menu. Take the third option down, which is a little person with a magnifying glass.
Yep.
And it says find in tree. So you type in the name. So you type in Marianne or just Mary, and it'll come up with a list of all the people who are called Marianne in your tree. And it will even show people. This is something which slightly melts people's heads, but it's a really, really useful thing to know. So you've got your big tree. And what normally happens is everybody in your tree, so everyone in your ancestry tree, or any tree, but in your ancestry tree, for instance, is attached to each other. But you can, if you remove the relationship, you can end up with like little floating branches. So do you remember a few months ago, I had to lop off one of my branches. So I lopped them off. So I removed the relationship of the person that attached that branch to my tree, but I didn't delete that branch because I think you're going to... But when you look at your tree, you're only going to see your big main tree, or you can search for the name of the floating person or the floating branch, and then you'll be able to see just that person or just that floating branch if they're unattached. So if you've got two Marianne's, one with her maiden name, for instance, and one with a married surname, you've searched on your Marianne's, you've got your list. Have you found a list of Marianne's in your tree?
I have indeed, yep.
Excellent. So now you will be able to merge duplicate. So there's a I'm sure there's a merge duplicate button, and it's really cool because you're able to find your two Marianne's, and then it has a side-by-side view, and then you can pick and choose which details you want to keep. So for this instance, you'd want to keep the entry with her maiden name, but if you've got details of her Briggs marriage, you'd want to keep that. You choose which of the details you want to include, and then you merge the two people together. Perfect. So you go to the person's profile if you want to merge one person with another person in your tree. Let's say you added somebody to your tree, you've long forgotten that, and then you add them again. And this is a really easy instance to do, which I think has happened to you potentially, is if somebody's marrying multiple times and then you don't realise that you've already added them and you're not following the thing of adding them under their maiden name. And so you actually end up adding them, say, for instance, once under the maiden name, once under a married name. Anyway, you go to their profile. And up at the top, if you've just kept the colour scheme as the standard colour scheme, that on the big dark grey bar, below their little space where you can add a photo for them, there's lots of little things you can do with your tree. So, for instance, you could choose to view the person in the tree, or view notes that have been written that you've written about the person, view comments that you or somebody else has written about the person, or there's merge with duplicate. So let's say you had a duplicate person, you'd press that, mm-hmm. and you would then find another person you wanted to merge with. So let's say I've got a John Hastings, and then I'm going to look for another John that I want to merge him with.
Don't do it.
And then it will bring up a little comparison window, so you can choose which details, which names, which places you want to keep.
That's brilliant. That's like when you're pulling in a new record as well, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like this is this person, you have this person.
Yes.
And you're going to take the date of birth because you didn't have that before. You're going to take where they live, stuff like that.
Yes.
Oh, that's really useful.
And then you just press merge. So it's super useful. You obviously want to make sure that you definitely are choosing the right people to merge. Otherwise, you're going to have a little headache on your hands.
Yeah.
But because as far as I know, there isn't an undo button. So once you've merged them, you're going to have to manually do it if you didn't want them merged. So be super careful, but it's really handy if you do want to.
Yeah? Sit there crying. Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yes, no crying. We don't want to be crying.
I've just looked on mine, and mine's slightly different. I don't have the words underneath the person's name at all. But if I click on the tools in the top right-hand corner, It shows me all the same things that you've just discussed. So
it does. Yeah, Ancestry, I mean, lots of interfaces are like that, aren't they? They have a few different ways that you can get to the things. And I think you can actually choose what you want to view, what you want to view where, so you can customize it. But yes, the drop-down menu, go to the top right-hand corner, go to Tools, look in the drop-down menu, Merge and Duplicates there.
It's good. I like it. I'm a little bit terrified now, though, because obviously she's now got 3 marriages. I can see me getting really interested in her and her becoming a new rabbit hole for me.
We've got a wonderful article by this really great genealogist. He's called Wayne Shepherd, and it's not going in the magazine yet. It's going to go in the magazine in a few months' time, and it's about blended families. And he's saying how often blended families occur, that they're absolutely nothing new. And because of, you know, war, women dying in childbirth, industrial accidents, every reason you can imagine, you know, people having shorter lifespans, then people did have multiple marriages, and there's no welfare state to keep your family afloat. That, you know, if the mum dies, there's no welfare state to look after the kids while you're at work, and there's no benefit for you. So you need to get a new wife. Vice versa, if your husband dies, there's no one to bring in the, you know, there's no welfare state, and there's no one to bring you the bread, so you get married again. So people married often. And so your Mary Ann, that would be fascinating to know why her previous spouses died. You do also have the thing that divorce is really, really expensive, and it used to have to be by an act of parliament. So what a palaver. And so obviously it was a very privileged thing that very few people could do through the Victorian period. And I think it was only after about, I'm probably going to get this date wrong, 1857, that divorce became more possible, but it's still a hugely complicated rigmarole thing well into the 20th century, and still viewed a little bit scandalously. So people would do lots of things to cover their tracks. So just because someone marries for a second or third time, their previous spouses don't necessarily have to have died, and they probably won't have got divorced. So you could be looking at bigamy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a serial killer, if I'm...
Well, it is all possible.
Let's get excited.
Yeah. And then if it's a serial killer, she says cheerfully, you'll be able to look at newspaper reports and there'll be loads of coverage. Family history definitely has the capacity to really warp your brain. You're like, excellent, excellent. We're going to find out loads about this person.
A scandal.
Yeah.
I am already feeling the urge to discover more.
Mm.
And I need to hold back. I need to go back and sort Ida out, and sort George Horatio and his various wives out as well.
Mm.
But now I can do that, because that was the whole point of me going through stuff with my mum, was to see what documents she had. So now I can go find the death certificates finally.
And I think I think it's really cool what you're doing. It doesn't matter if you're not looking at your DNA when you said you would, because what you're doing is detailed, careful research. And all of those details that you're finding out, the fact of Mary Ann and her multiple marriages, or somebody else and their children dying young, that's, you're actually gaining an understanding of somebody's life. And you know, on the kind of detective side, you're learning loads of research skills. And on the finding out your family story, you're gaining an understanding of what their lives were like. And all these details, they are absolutely crucial. You don't want a broad brush picture of, oh, I come from the Ward family from Pudsey. It's like, and? That's not a story, is it?
No.
It's what actually happened to them in their lives, and then putting their lives in like the context. So for instance, your George Horatio, you know, members of his family dying young, I think other people potentially dying in the war, or even just the war happening, all of that, it just makes you stop and think, like, poor guy.
Yeah, definitely. Really tragic. It's that thing of bringing them to life. They're not just a name and a number on your tree. They're a person, and they've lived through all these things. It's that George Horatio, and obviously I prattle on about him a lot now, but it just seems really tragic, his life. It might not have been, but obviously he's experienced a lot of death and heartache and stuff, or I'm projecting anyway, at least. But equally, like you've said it before about, obviously, there's no contraception, etc., and people just used to have kids every 2 years or so. I found a person the other day with my mum, and they had, I think, 8 children. Mm. Just as you said, it was one every 2 years, which was fascinating to see what you said sort of realised.
Yeah, it's just kind of biology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It must be very tiring having that many kids.
Yes, it must be. I think we... Like, this could be awful, but I think we have much higher standards. You know, even when I was little kids, 3 or 4 year olds would be put outside to play with the big kids, and the big kids would look after them or not, and you'd just be scampering around outside. So that's, you know, 50 years ago. And now you wouldn't send 3 or 4 year olds out to play in the road with the 7 and 8 year olds. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. So we, as a parent today in you know, the 20th, 21st century, you have to spend a lot more time on the kids that you do have. Whereas you had 8 kids today, that'd just be shattering. The level of hands-on care you have to provide to a kid in the modern world.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously we now live in a bigger climate of fear as well. So you wouldn't be able.
Yeah, much more careful. Shall I tell you what I've been getting up to?
Please do.
So I've been thinking about VE Day because we did a really cool May issue and it was packed with good advice about trying to information to help people trace their ancestors in the armed forces through the Second World War. And there was a really cool article by Dean Kirby and it was about how to trace the places where your ancestors served in Europe, the, you know, battlefield visits. And the information he gave is really good because you could go on an actual tour or you could just do a virtual tour by using the digitized maps and things. You can still find out such a lot. So that was really interesting. And then Graham Bandy did an article about all the different sorts of records that you could find to actually learn about what your ancestors did. So I thought, well, I do know a little bit about my grandparents and what they did in the Second World War, but I don't know a lot. So I'm going to have a look and see what they were actually doing around VE Day. And then a bit like you, you know, when you start looking at something, I got stuck on the first grandparent I chose. So not stuck, but I kind of got absorbed into them. So I think this is really interesting because it, for me, it was really interesting anyway. So he was serving in Burma at around the time that VE Day happened. So VE Day happened on the 8th of May, 1945. So that's victory in Europe. So great. The Allies have got victory in Europe. Obviously, it's a long story and there's all like the demobilization and the army of occupations, which go on for years and years, even decades afterwards. And it's a slow process. People gradually coming home. And like you said, with your George ratio in the First World War, people are living with the long-term consequences of lost family members and the PTSD and all that they have to live through. So it's not the end of the war, it's not the end of the war. Anyway, so my grandfather that I chose to look at, he was in Burma. So obviously this is not in Europe. But I thought, well, out of interest, let's see what he's doing because he's going to hear on the radio that there's been victory in Europe and he's out in Burma. So I knew he already that he was a prisoner of war. So I thought, well, let's actually find out. He's in his prison camp. Victory happens in Europe. What's actually happening in his prison camp on the 8th of May, 1945? So weirdly, although we haven't got VJ Day, which is, I think it's the 15th of August. It's the middle of August. So VJ Day, victory over Japan, that was 80 years ago, this coming August. So although we haven't got victory over the war in the Far East, when we're looking back at 80 years ago, May 1945, he was actually already freed from his prison camp. So this is what happened. 25th of April 1945, he's in the prison camp. He's in Rangoon jail. And they march away about 350, the Japanese guards march away about 350 of their British prisoners of war and about 70, 75 Americans. They just march them off. But there's 150 of them who are too ill to march. They've got beriberi, dysentery, sores on their legs. They're weighing, like my grandfather was 6'4", but he only weighed 6.5 stone. He was just a skeleton by the end of the war.
Wow.
So he was one of the ones who was too poorly to be marched away. So the 25th, they've all marched off. The really poorly ones are left in the camp. Some quite kind of lazy guards get left to look after them. Then I think it's in the middle of the night on the 29th, 30th, they hear vehicles driving away and there's a note pinned on the gate and the guards are going, "We've left. Leave if you want to." Yeah.
Wow.
I know. But there's chaos happening and obviously they are not able to blend in with the local population because they're British, American, Australian, they're Caucasian people, and you're not going to be able to escape into enemy territory, partly because you're really ill, partly because you just stand out like a sore thumb. And so they decide the best thing they can do is barricade themselves in there. And then, so we're now into like the 30th of April, 1st of May, they realise that the Allies are coming and going to be attacking Burma even more strongly. But they could potentially get bombed by their own side. So some of them climb on the roof and they write, "Jack's gone, British here," in big white capitals. And you can see it on the aerial photos.
Wow.
And then on the second, so it's the next day, things are happening fast and it's chaos, isn't it? And they're so poorly. So then the next day, a bomb lands on the jail and they're not sure whether the bomb was intended to land on the jail to help kind of break through a wall and break down the wall so they can escape, or whether it was to help destroy them. So they're not sure what's happening. Then the same day, a massive food parcel lands in the jail. So they're, okay, they do know we're here and they're giving us some food. And then the next day, on the third, then the allies turn up and they are now kind of safe and they're evacuated. Some of them are evacuated up to the Himalayas, which my geography is terrible anyway. So Burma is just kind of below the Himalayas. So it's not as bad as it sounds. Rangoon's down at the south. So they have to travel all the way up through Burma, go to the Himalayas and they get rescued. And I found this other person's diary. So my grandfather never wrote a diary, but this other person wrote a diary and he was really poorly in hospital in the Himalayas. And then he said, and he looked around the ward once he got himself a little bit better. He looked around the ward and there was this other man who was lying opposite him, who was an absolute skeleton, who had sores all over his legs. And he was given a special diet. He was given special vitamins. And every few hours, the medics would come and turn his body because he was too weak to even move himself or do anything. And that was my grandfather. So now I just have this amazing insight into my poor grandfather. And he wasn't an old man. He was a 25-year-old man by then. So it was a few days before his 24th birthday that he got shot down. And then he's kind of 24 and a half now at the end of the Second World War. And he's fought the whole way through the Second World War. I mean, he's such a young person to live through all of that. Anyway, he survived and obviously otherwise I wouldn't be here, would I? But but it was very moving. And what I loved about it was the absolute unpredictability. Because if you say to somebody VE Day, I'm sorry, I know I'm rambling, but to me it felt really important. Say VE Day, and pretty much most people will be able to visualize that guy in the Navy, I think he's in the US Navy, holding a girl and they're kissing each other in Times Square. That's VE Day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just, that's the point of family history. That's just not VE Day. That's two people having a wonderful photo taken in a country which, apart from Pearl Harbor, hasn't seen fighting on its own turf. And that is not most people's experiences of VE Day. So that's why family history matters, because our ancestors weren't all standing on Times Square in gorgeous clothes kissing each other. Yeah, they were having all sorts of other experiences. So that's what happens to our family history.
It's all context.
That's over.
No, it's a good point. I mean, that's all amazing, all that stuff you found out. How and where did you find all that information? Like you're saying about this map showing you the picture of the painting on the roof.
Yes. So because we all grew up knowing that my grandfather was a prisoner of war. So this was something he didn't really talk about. Like he taught me to use chopsticks. Because he learned how to use chopsticks when he was prisoner of war. But when you look back, you think, oh, that's why he knew how to use chopsticks. And he was very precise about them. So there's a book which had been written about the squadron he served in. And the author of the book was just so detailed and wrote lists of, the other ranks' names, lists of the pilots, lists of people who got awards, lists of people who died, little anecdotes in there. So that was really, really helpful, that book. It's called Silently Into the Midst of Things, and that's the motto for the squadron.
Wow.
He's with 177 Squadron, and so 35% of people in the squadron died. It's just horrendous. That's really, really bad odds. Like 35%, but you always think, oh, everybody died in the First World War. And I've banged all at this before. It's like 1 in 10 people. So obviously that is still really, really bad. But 35% of people dying in your squadron is super bad. Or 35% of people who were flying, so not ground crew. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I found out that. And then I found out good old Google, amazing people who've done kind of roles of honour. The Imperial War Museum's fantastic to look at because it has lots of photos, not just speaking about his service, but lots of our people's service. So, and it has really detailed photos. You might find photos. I found some photos of the dormitories that my my other granny might have slept in. So obviously I don't know if she did or she didn't, but it gives you an idea. She was in the Wrens, so it gives you an idea of their wartime living experiences. So the Imperial War Museum's good, Google's good, other people, because it's military history, you get people who get obsessed about it and will put such labours of love online on their websites.
Right.
But you see that you need a few facts to get you started. You need to know which squadrons and things they served in. Otherwise, if you don't have any clues, you don't know which unit war diaries to look up, do you?
No. It's just really cool. Like when you were telling the story, I was like literally there visualizing it as you were saying it. And it's nice to be able to piece everything together like you've done. It's really cool.
It is, to me, it feels really important, and it just gives you an insight to history as well, because like all of our lives, like everything's blooming obvious once it's happened, isn't it? And we're all so clever going, oh, well, that shouldn't have happened, or that was easy, or that was scary. But at the time, you literally don't know what's going to happen next.
No. And it's so easy for us as well to, like, you could just quite easily say, oh, he was a prisoner of war, and put a full stop on it, and that's it. We know what prisoner of war means, but you don't know any details beyond that. It's like, oh yeah, he got captured. Whereas you've built the history and like the texture of his life, and it's great.
It is. I think that's where the interest lies for any of our family history. I mean, that's where the interest lies with you, doesn't it? With finding out about Mary Ann's multiple marriages, and
yeah.
So by finding out her spouse's death certificates and why they died, you're just definitely going to learn stuff.
Yeah, what her favourite poison was to use.
Yes.
Disclaimer, I've got nothing to back any of this up.
It's definitely not going to be boring to Nathan. You're going to have an interesting time. Yeah,
definitely. I just need to not think about it. My homework is already, I'm finishing off this Ida and Maggie, getting their death certificates. That's my main task. And I know I can't finish things off because you can't, can you? I'll find something else to look at. But I want to round that section off and then like come back the other way. Mm. But clearly I'm not going too far away from following this Mary Ann. Anyway, whatever.
No, I think that's what happens to me, is I'll end up with some little pockets of family history that I found out, you know, relatively, well, feels like a lot to me or more. And then I'll have other pockets where I'm just stuck, or it just hasn't even captured my imagination. There'll be like something I've just never thought to look at. And then sometimes, even years later, you'll think, why have I never looked into this before? This is amazing.
It is like this week I got back not further, but I was filling in the great, great, greats. And some of them, with it being a direct path, you just like, you see the document, you put the name in, you see the document, you put the next name in. And it's just a straight line, and you're not thinking about anything or any context or anything. Whereas one little detail, and I know mine started off with the Tank Man and World War One, but I'm now looking at that entire family and finding more stuff about other people in that family because I've built the texture of their lives a bit more. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you get in all the straight facts too easily, it doesn't make you pause and analyze. It's quite interesting because I feel like I'm skipping generations. I feel like I'm not doing people justice now because I'm at the great, great, great point. And it's like some of these great greats, I've just skipped right by. I've just put their information in. They're all just facts.
Mm.
It's strange how certain bits just pull you in. I guess you need a hook though, don't you? You need some bizarre detail just to capture your eye and then...
Yes, and it's the same with the DNA. Like none of it, you can't do all of it, but even doing some small sections in more detail, you learn about. It's like when you read a book or watch a film, you do learn about life, don't you? And you empathise with somebody, and you think what's important, and you kind of, I think that happens with family history as well, and you try and just pause and think what someone else's life experience is like. So it's worthwhile, even if you can't do it for everybody.
No. It's terrifying. I literally can see myself getting obsessed by everyone. And then it'll just be like the longest ever family tree progression that went nowhere because I've gone sideways on every single person. But
that's fine. And also think how lucky, like in the months and years to come, how lucky someone's going to feel when they come across your tree and you've done all this in-depth research on, you know, a few random people who've really captured your imagination, but they're going to be such nuggets of gold for somebody else.
Mm.
Like that person who wrote the diary, who wrote about seeing my grandpa in the bed opposite. And what are the chances of that? Isn't it?
Yeah. That was brilliant, yeah. Nice little name drop. It's cool. When you sent me those war diaries for my guy, I was desperately searching, wanting just to see his name pop up, even if it was like just on Sports Day, just to give some, oh, that's him, that's my great uncle or whatever he was. Nice, isn't it? It's a little historical shout out.
Exactly. Yeah. Very well said. Very well said. So what are we going to be doing next? I think I'm going to be still immersed in my, what were my ancestors doing on VE Day query. That's going to keep me going for at least a few weeks.
I think that's a great project, though. I was visualising your story as you were telling it. I'm amazed at the information you've actually got there to be able to chart it almost day by day. That's fantastic. I think for me, I want to finish off the, find out what happened to Ida. So I'm going to be ordering some death certificates, which should be good for me because I've not done that yet. So I'm quite looking forward to that experience. And the fact that I've got my mum interested could mean that I'm going to be going off on tangents because I'm sure she'll want to be involved more now. But obviously, my murderous Marianne. I'm quite intrigued with that now. I've ruined it though now. I've made it really sensational. It's going to be really mundane, but whatever.
No, it's going to be a relief. It's going to be a relief. You won't have to have any trauma. Yeah?
Yes.
It'll be a good thing. Don't worry about it.
You found happiness in the end with my relative.
Yeah. So we hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. We've covered quite a lot of different things. As you can see, there's loads of cool information we've got about military family history. And we're covering that in our e-newsletter as well. So if you do like to find information to help you dig into your ancestors' details more, then do sign up for our free e-newsletter. And we can keep you posted at least once a week with lots of family history gems. Thanks for listening then. Bye-bye.